Okay, Mr. Crawford, would you please lead us in the pledge? Okay, I have one announcement out of closed session in one matter of proposed termination. The board unanimously accepted the resignation of one certificated employee and approved a related settlement in return for an immediate resignation and a release of all potential claims. Mr. Davis was absent. Then we'll move on to student representative of the board, Manber.
Hello, everyone. I will be reading the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts school report for school activities. Now that we are over a month into the school year, our clubs have been having meetings and coming up with exciting ideas for the school year. Some of our clubs include Excel Club, Fashion Club, Japanese Language and Culture Club, Athletic Club, Prayer Club, Multicultural Club, and many more. Our first positivity day for the year is going to be on Friday, September 29th, during lunch. This helps spread kindness and happiness around our campus and makes students feel appreciated for who they are. We will be having our first Dragon Fest of the year on Friday, October 13th, at MCAA's outdoor stage. Dragon Fest is for MCAA students to perform for their school during a lunchtime show. Auditions for Dragon Fest are going to be next Thursday and Friday during lunch, and all talents are welcome to audition. MCAA will be having a Halloween dance on Friday, October 27th, from 7 to 10 p.m. in the MHS cafeteria. On October 31st, we will be having a costume contest as well as a performance by the MCAA dance department to the song Thriller during lunch. For productions, Starflight is a collection of plays written, directed, and performed by MCAA students. Starflight took place on September 15th and 16th at the outdoor stage, and many people attended it. Our next upcoming production is called Much Ado About Nothing, and will take place from Wednesday, October 13th through Sunday, October 22nd at MCAA's outdoor stage. However, there will not be a show on Friday, October 20th. For field trips, the Ashland Oregon trip was from Tuesday, September 19th through Friday, September 22nd. In this trip, MCAA students interested in theater got the opportunity to go to Ashland and watch plays and attend workshops. Many MCAA students enjoyed this trip. Lastly, on Wednesday, October 4th, all MCAA seniors had the opportunity to go to Yuba College for Yuba College Information Day. College representatives from different CSUs, UCs, and private universities will be there as well. Thank you.
And now we'll move on to our presentation from Student Services, Tony Vernier.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tony Vernier, Executive Director of Special Education, and thank you for this opportunity to let me brag a little bit about student services and everything that's been happening in our department over the last few years. Our department is comprised of special education, psychological services, mental health, health services, speech therapists. We have a dental van, as you know, occupational therapists, adaptive PE teachers, many folks who make student services a very resourceful and supportive department for our district. Get the hang of this quick. That's not what you're supposed to see. One sec. F5 didn't work. That's it. As I detailed in my written report, our school psychologists are straight up rock stars in our field. Last year, we fully implemented what is called pattern of strengths and weakness model for determining learning disabilities. This was pretty much a big deal in the work that we do because learning disabilities comprise 48% of our kids in the district with IEPs. After about a year of study and a little bit of debate, our team determined which model to move forward with, and were able to then leave behind a model that was never based in research, and the decision for using it historically was never even based on norms. So it was a good shift for our department. One of our team, Ryan Inouye, Ryan, I'm going to make you wave, was and continues to be very instrumental in this shift. His study and expertise has proved just invaluable to our department. With this shift, we have improved our accuracy in diagnosing learning disabilities. In particular, we hope that we are going to have improved identification rates in our subgroups of students who are English learners and also our subgroup of students who are African American. Within those groups of kids, we haven't been able to use standardized measures of or estimates of intelligence, and it's been complicated at best to make that decision, and so we're feeling very positive about this move. So this picture that you're looking at shows a system of visual supports that I think were primarily created by Ryan. I think Lauren may have had some. No? Okay. No input. The cards represent the various learning processes and displays for parents and teachers a student's specific weaknesses or strengths. And then the other side of the cards represent the different academic areas, and which then may be directly linked based on a huge body of research. We can now link those exact processing weaknesses with an estimated academic weakness, and has this massive body of research behind it, finally, to better identify learning disabilities. I'm getting the head nod, so that means I'm explaining it correctly. So one of the big pieces that this has provided is educators, parents, we bring them to a table and talk about something very challenging like eligibility and disability, and they finally understand what it is what we're talking about. So that's been great. With this shift, we found ourselves leaders in our field, and although somewhat reluctant leaders at first, we're now, Ryan is assisting our peers over in Yuba City to help support their learning and their shift. We share so many kids back and forth that it makes sense and is best practice that we are identifying those learning disabilities in the same way and utilizing best practice. This last July, I was able to present at the UC Davis Mind Institute. They host a summer institute for neurodevelopmental disorders, and I finally got my blue ribbon under my name to be a speaker and talk about how our district and our team was successful with this shift. And now we're moving into a data collaborative with CSU Sacramento and their teaching department or their special education department to pull together our data on English learners and learning disability identification rates pre and post the shift to PSW. So that should be a good project. With ESSA and PLCs, how we design education and intervention is more than ever becoming much more blended and seamless, becoming one system of support and intervention instead of two, instead of general and special. And what is happening with this is we're able to finally provide more timely intervention, more research-based intervention in the moment, as opposed to waiting for kids to fail and then providing support services for special education. So 3 years ago, we designed the Learning Center at Olive Hurst School, and Mr. Dan Pingle, Ms. Melissa White opened the center with the leadership of one of our paraprofessionals, who's actually soon to be a teacher, Miranda Clayton. And we had our amazing school psychologist, Penny Rogers, and Rebecca, Serena, Veronica, Casey, all very highly trained paraprofessionals who are in that center running intervention groups for all kids, not just students with IEPs, all day long. There's a shot of Mr. Pingle over there in the corner with a group of kids. Mr. Pingle also pushes into general fifth grade classrooms to support the math instruction across several classrooms where our fifth grade students with IEPs are clustered into those classrooms. And if you haven't had a chance to come and check out the center while students are in there, at times we can have as many as 50 students running through the intervention centers. It's really something to see, and to see the technology pieces that Brian talked about in his presentation in August. It's quite impressive. Just one more shot of, this is actually a station where we run our intensive language arts curriculum, or FLEX. I think you've heard about. This is that section of the classroom. Pretty snazzy. We are right now, like in soon, breaking through another wall at Linda School and building another learning center. So we are very excited about this project and really do intend to use this model to support other sites to building these, creating learning environments that are more center-based. We feel like our student achievement data is pretty strong thus far out of Olive Hurst. And the other piece that is another positive impact is learners at Olive Hurst in the upper grades are spending little to zero time in traditional special day class settings. They're becoming unnecessary because the students are coming into the center for intensive academic intervention. They begin and end their day in a general classroom. They identify themselves as a part of that general classroom and not a different special day class setting. So that benefit has been incredible, and the general ed staff at Olive Hurst has been, for the most part, very supportive and open and understanding of the process. Extended school year, aka special education summer school. Now, we do provide intense reading and basic math intervention during the summer for certain students with probably our most significant special needs. But what we have created over the last several years is a summer experience that they want to come to and want to be a part of. We've partnered with a few local businesses and been able to provide some enriching experiences through their days. This is Geyser Pets, not my favorite day, but that's Amanda. It was her favorite day. That turtle was not put down for quite some time. Jazz Gill is one of our mental health clinicians in the district, and Jazz together with Katie Ann Joyner and Brooke Hargrave, who are paraprofessionals in our ED program, and we combine all of our kids during the summer, whether you're in ED program or special day class, we're all together as learners. They designed the Cedar Lane Diner, and it wasn't just kids cooking and eating. It was designing a menu and a shopping list and doing the math behind the recipes, and then the creativity of setting nice little place settings. We had kids who were customers, kids who were servers. Really a nice day, and also an opportunity to be coaching and teaching kids on social behaviors and how you act in the community. For some of our kids, you can tell that was their first restaurant-like experience. So that was a fun and creative part of our extended school year. I love this picture. This is Robert. He is a business owner here in town and owns Love Energy and Blessings on D Street. He and his partner, thank you, Miss Jamie. I can read. he and his partner taught the kids about gems and minerals and their different properties, and then a bit about mining in our region. And they did some crafting with the kids, and the little ones were so focused to every second of this day and their visit. They really got so much out of it. It was something. Robert is actually a graduate of MJUSD and was a student with an IEP. So pretty amazing. So now the pictures go away, so it's not as much fun. looking forward, in my written report, I addressed our current performance data in special education. The Federal Office of Special Ed is really putting considerable pressure on California right now. California in a little bit of hot water, because our Office of Special Education at California would collect data, say your data's not good, but then not much guidance or consequence or support for how to improve your data. So now CDE has set some rather high targets for us to achieve in several performance areas, and we have a few that require some very immediate attention. The concept of least restrictive environment is serving students with IEPs in general education settings with their non-disabled peers to the very maximum extent possible. In regard to least restrictive environment, we currently have 46% of our students with IEPs who are in general education 80% or more of their day. So we need to have 51% of those students of our students with IEPs in general ed 80% or more. So by December 1st. And then sort of at the other end, we have 16% of our students with IEPs in general ed for less than 40% of their day. And we need to keep that, maintain that percentage before 22. I mean, below 22%, which our next check is on December 1st. We're good here, we're on target. We just need to keep an eye on it as we increase our students who are in Gen Ed 80% or more. We need to keep an eye on this other less than 40% side. We've been working on this placement and inclusion effort already. We've been training site administrators and IEP teams. We are currently building in trainings for general education teachers to build their confidence with universal design and lesson planning for all students in their classrooms. And then we've also been working closely with specific school sites on larger programmatic shifts or larger service delivery shifts. Yuba Gardens, Arboga, and Lyndhurst have made some big steps of moving kids more into general settings by sort of undepartmentalizing the students. In other words, kids with IEPs are served in general ed for science and history, social sciences, and then our teachers go into that environment and our paras go into that environment and provide the support or even co-teach lessons. So that is improving. And by bringing all of our teachers together to collaborate, so the PLC process is going to also have a very natural positive impact on this least restrictive environment concept. Across the country, we're also focused on discipline practices for students with IEPs. Within our district, we have identified some disproportionate data for African American students in suspension and expulsion rates. So our hope is, as we become more focused with PBIS and all of our positive behavior interventions, at the same time we look to our other community agency partners to have some very meaningful conversations about this disproportionate issue, that we can get it down to zero is what we're looking for there. The very best indicator of whether or not any of this work that we do in student services is our end product, our graduates. And we need to know, are we graduating students with special needs to the same rate that students without IEPs are graduating? So we need to really be studying our graduation rates. And then our kids that graduate with IEPs, are they moving on to higher education and competitive work equivalent to our students without IEPs? So our post-school or post-secondary outcomes needs attention. We have 34% of our graduates with IEPs going on to higher education. We have 55% currently going on to higher education or competitive employment. We're really looking into how those categories are pooled by the state. We're studying that now because those are our goals for 2018. 74% of our students are graduates with IEPs is where we need to be. So we're drilling down in that data now, starting that, really analyzing what we can be doing better and differently, both internally to our district in terms of our service to students, and then also out in the community in regard to opportunity for our students once they graduate. So stay tuned, because that's my next project that we'll be working on. Any questions?
For all that you do, I really commend you and your gang, and what you're doing is so important. I mean, you will always have my support for helping special needs kids. And I'm really sorry that I think your job is not going to get easier. It's only going to get more difficult as more and more kids are impacted. But the question I had to do with something you said earlier, and I don't know if I heard you right or not. And I'm just curious. I think you mentioned kids that, you know, second language English learners. And I wanted you to elaborate a little bit on how you evaluate those kids, because I think that must be really difficult.
Definitely. And when I was practicing as a school psychologist, to some degree, it's a rule everything out first kind of assessment and a whole lot of professional or clinical judgment. So we used to actually, and we kind of cringe and go, yeah, this is what we did for years. We used nonverbal measures of intelligence, which actually don't have as much research connection to the academic performance area. So we're thinking that we weren't doing such a great job. And with these different areas of intelligence now further broken down based on neurological research, we can better assess those students that we can't just give a standardized verbal intelligence test to. And I think this is where the big research out of Sacramento is going to be looking at. Hopefully those identification rates are going to be much improved, and we'll be finding less learning disabilities for students who are English learners. We already are. We've got about a 4% decrease just in a year. So we've had some false positives, for sure. And we are explaining with parents, this was a language issue. This was a language learner issue, not a disability. We're certainly better diagnosed or finding students eligible with much more confidence than we ever had. Yeah.
What percentage of our kids in our district that we have enrolled are in special ed? Do you know?
I do. I look at the number every day when I open up our data management system. About 1,300 students, and I don't know what our general pop is today, but about 1,300 students with IEPs, that's all students. So even if it's a mild speech articulation that drives their IEP, and we stay just below the state average, which is about 11%. Yeah.
Do you have very many? Do you know how many are autistic that are in the special ed program?
Jessica, 72.
Wow.
Right. Actually 73 as of this morning. Yeah.
Well, your crew does a good job. I know it's a difficult job.
That's the thing. I can come up with any idea. It's my crew that carries it out day to day.
It takes a team.
Yeah. Yep.
Tony, to you, I heard nothing but praise over the extended summer program. So
yes.
Thank you. Well done.
Thanks.
I would also like to say, like everyone else, thank you very much to you and your department and all your staff members. And I think one of the things you had mentioned earlier, too, is not just the educational portion that we're taking care of in the classroom, but being able to connect these families to outside services, because they're only going to be with us for so long. And to be productive folks, they need to know what services are out there and to be able to continue on. So I think that's a very big or very important part of what you're doing also. Thank you.
Tony, I would just like to say to you, thank you very much to you and your department for doing such an outstanding job. And I was very excited about the fact that I do know Robert, who happens to be a Marysville High School graduate. And I'm glad that you all are able to use people in our community to go to the schools and to let the kids be able to see and learn about the minerals and all the different little things that they do there. But it just made me happy to see that we do use people in our community to bring back to the schools. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, comments from board members. Ms. Scott? Mr. Davis? Mr. Allison? Mr. Rasmussen?
I would just like to thank all the staff members that were involved in last Friday night's dedication of the Glenn E. Harris Field at War Memorial Stadium. Everybody that, all the way from the site to everybody that was involved, it was a wonderful presentation, and the facility looked great. So thank you for all your hard work in doing that.
Mr. Fleury.
Yes, I noticed in one of the notes we got this week, Ms. Mike had written a letter of praise for the grounds department, and it was a very genuine letter. And that means a lot when the employees hear from their bosses. I remember one time when in the district office, I said, told her she was doing a good job, and she teared up and said, I've never had a board member tell me this in 25 years. And sometimes we forget, we get so busy, but when you let them know they're doing a good job, that's a lot. And then one of the 12 traits of leadership, the last one, is when you give genuine praise. And that means a lot, Mike, that you took the time and you noticed something small to commend them. And I was impressed with that. It was very good. And I heard from some of the employees. They were appreciative, too. Also, I did enjoy the dedication for Glenn Harris. It brought back memories of 12 years that I sat with him on the board. He was just a good person, and it was well done last Friday. Also, tomorrow we're going to visit Cedar Lane, Mr. Davis and I. And I still, after all these years, get excited when I go to the school sites and talk to the kids and the staff and see how they're doing. And we're planning a visit at Lyndhurst. And when I was setting up the visit today, it was mentioned that the secretary, you know, they redid the Lyndhurst office, and she said there's somebody that has gone to each school, was setting up, getting memorabilia or items from each school. And he told her when he went in there, said, you know, I walked into Lyndhurst, I've never seen a school office look this nice. And she wanted to make sure that I knew that. Also, we were at Kathleen Hansen's real quick to take her a program on the talent show coming up. And again, the talent show starts this Saturday. And as I mentioned before, I want to mention it again. The first prize is $1,000 with 8 hours in a recording studio with a professional CD. So that's gotten the attention of the people. But I am excited that we're going to start visiting schools. And I think as board members, going and visit schools is one of the greatest things you can do to really see firsthand. I'm a firm believer you must inspect what you expect from the district. And it's just exciting to see where we're going as a district.
Mr. Crawford? Okay, opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers, Operating Engineers Local Number 3, California School Employees Association 326-648, Association of Management and Confidential Employees, Supervisory Unit, okay, nobody. Public comments, I have one public comment card. Laura Cotney. Hi. Could you, yeah, please come up to the mic.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. My name is Laura Cotney. I'm the administrator over at Paragon Collegiate Academy, you know, K-8 charter school here over on Sampson Street. We have a lot of good things going on at Paragon right now, a lot of changes. We have an academic program as well as a Falcons before and after school program, free of charge to our parents that attend the school. In those areas, we have focused on academics as well as enrichment to offer academic support, academic hour for every day after school for the kids, where they are put with an assigned paraeducator in the program to answer their questions and give that academic support, as well as when they switch over at 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, it's an enrichment time where we bring in sewing, cooking, technology, sports club, some of the other things that we trying to address the whole child, which is one of our focuses there at the school. Some of the newer things that are happening at Paragon over the last few years, we have added 3 small intervention rooms to allow our kids to be pulled out that need that special intervention in reading and or math. We also added a uniform store to help accommodate our parents who sometimes struggle to find those uniforms that the school, that the children are required to wear at the school, and at no cost to the children, meaning that it meets pretty much your everyday Walmart, Target, and French Toast price. And encouragement for the parents to buy through the uniform store just because absolutely it's all approved material. This year I'm very proud to say we are at 190 students for enrollment. And proud to say all new students meet with me annually. Everybody that enrolls at Paragon comes in and has a meeting, a get-to-know-you meeting, after they've toured the school and completed that application process. So it's nice to know that I have met with those parents, talked with the students, you know, and found out, you know, basically getting to know them, their parents, and why they're coming to Paragon. So a big piece of that, so the kids know me. One of the biggest joys of my day is the start of the day at 7:30. I greet all the students so they get to know me on a more personal basis versus just I'm the mean old principal in the office that dishes out discipline. Trying to balance my images is quite a chore in regards to that piece of it. So meeting them in the morning and encouraging kindergartners to say, and me to be able to know their name, good morning, Gregory, and good morning, Mrs. Cotney, is really... It's a nice thing to say that I know every one of my students at my school and what grade they are in. And a lot of the parents actually are, I wouldn't say impressed, but it means something to them that I know their children's name. I know who they are. A parent comes to my, you know, comes up at my front door. I don't even ask them their name by the third week. I know who they are, who they're here for, and whether I can dismiss them or not. One of the other parts of Paragon is we host a fabulous. I mean, it's an awesome fall festival event. It is hosted this year on October 14th and starts at 5 o'clock, goes to 9 o'clock. Amongst our fall festival, we have an amazing, scary haunted house, a trunk or treat in our parking lot. We have a chili cook-off going on in the cafeteria area. And it's a huge community event that it was so disappointing to have to cancel last year to due to weather. But definitely an event that I invite you all to come to. And if the president would allow me, I do have the invitations for the board members to, as I've done in the past, I've always handed out those personal invitations. But at this time, I also would like to say that I am here with almost my right-arm man is Mr. Serafin Alvarez. He's also my CFO, as well as one of the founders of Paragon. So at this time, if I can present those invitations, I welcome everybody to come and see our school and see how we've grown and see all the amazing things we're doing there. And that's it. Thank you.
Good. For those that don't know, Laura is the daughter of Don Miller, who was an icon in this district, taught for 41 years at Yuba Gardens, and started back there not very long after Yuba Gardens was begun. Yeah, and her mother also, Darlene Miller, worked at Marysville High School.
Thank you again for your time.
Okay, superintendent's report, Dr. Todd.
I just would like to thank the board members who were able to come to last Friday's dedication. I know that everyone has busy schedules and sometimes there are conflicts, but certainly it was a very touching dedication, and certainly I believe Glenn was smiling down on us. I think he would have found that to be one of the highest honors that you could have bestowed upon him. So thank you, board, for doing that. And that's all I have this evening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 9/12/17. If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. Okay, consent agenda. Before we do the consent, there's one correction, page 53. corrected in the agreement. It's going to read change number two, compensation payment schedule, $6,000 per month instead of $6,500 per month. Okay, with that change on the consent, does anybody want anything pulled?
I would like number six under personnel services pulled, please.
Number six under personnel services.
Page six.
Yeah. Okay. Does anybody want anything else pulled? If not, is there a motion on the consent?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Rasmussen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Six yes. Okay, we'll go back to personnel services, number six.
Six yes or seven yes?
Oh, seven yes, I'm sorry.
So looking at the agreement with Mr. Sampson, the concerns I had is his actual start date is tomorrow. And the contract is for 185 days of service. So I was just curious if there's 185 days left to be able to fulfill that contract.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, you are.
So I guess my follow-up question was that it looks as though we're doing an amendment to another contract of a certain person in the district with the same amount of work days performing the same amount of work. And is this the correct amount for Mr. Sampson?
It is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, then I'll take a motion on personnel services number six in the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the agreement with Mr. Tom Sampson for consult services at Marysville High School.
I will second that.
Okay, the motion was made by Mr. Rasmussen, seconded by Mr. Allison. All those in favor?
Aye.
Seven yes. We will move on to new business, educational services number one, resolution 2017-1803, availability of textbooks and instructional materials. We're going to hold a public hearing, and that public hearing is open now. If anybody would like to come forward, any comments from board members?
Oops, sorry. So actually, looking on page 61, I think we're kind of in the process soon of the adoption of social science and history. But to look at the dates on some of those books that we have, I don't even know if we have enough editions of a 1984 geography book to be able to satisfy all the students in need of that, let alone the 1996 civics book. So hopefully there's enough of those old books around that we're being able to have for our students.
So currently in the classrooms, we have the older books, as you're saying. We have enough for every student in the schools. And so they do have enough books, albeit many of them are very old.
So when is the new adoption looking or coming, Lenny?
What we're looking at right now is the state of California adopts textbooks K-8. And they're going through that procedure right now where they have a state recommendation committee looking at K-8 textbooks. We expect that they'll come, they'll take that recommendation to the State Board of Education in November, and that by the end of November, we'll know what books are on the state's list for K-8. What we'll do at that time is, while that's happening, the publishers for the secondary materials are also working on their materials to get ready. What we're looking at for this year is to have our secondary folks look at history, social science textbooks and bring history, social science textbooks, new ones, to the high schools and middle schools next year, because those are the ones that have those books that are so old for history, social science. Mm-hmm. And we're holding off on the elementary K-6 adoption of history, social science. The standards themselves have not changed. We're using the exact same standards we used during the last textbook adoption. The framework, however, has changed. So the pedagogy that's spoken in the framework, that has changed. So we'll be using the framework and looking at that pedagogy to provide professional development for teachers this year for history, social science, We'll focus with the middle schools and high schools on pedagogy as well as preparing them to choose a new history social science curriculum for next school year.
So for 18-19 at all grade levels we're looking at it?
No, for middle school and high school, and it's going to be dependent on the available funding in regards to how that lays out, whether it will. Gay's looking at me.
It's important to realize that we've had multiple adoptions, and so the language arts adoption was far more than we had anticipated, or unfortunately it was probably the most costly adoption for materials. So with our $650,000 that we put away every year for textbook adoptions, we're pretty close on the dollars needed. So as we find additional pots of money, we'll drop those adoptions down in grade levels as we're able to do that. But certainly it's a huge cost, and it's also, the state stopped the old adoption cycle every 7 years, so they're trying to catch up, and so it's kind of back to back to back to back. We also have the math, high school math curriculum, that there were some changes, so we're looking at adopting new math books. So it's compounded by a number of factors, but certainly we are working very hard to get them the latest materials, especially at the high schools where that information has changed and they need to have the most current as the state rolls out the new adoption materials. So we're trying to get them in their hands as quickly as possible. But there's definitely a process, and the materials aren't done yet, so we can't. If we had a pot of money today, we couldn't go out and buy them. So we have to wait as the state rolls them out.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Nobody else? Okay, then I need a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. I need a second. Seconded by Mr. Davis. All those in favor? Seven yes. And then we need a motion to approve the resolution. Motion by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. All those in favor? Seven yes. And that was the last item on the agenda. So meeting's adjourned.